Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 6, Episode 112. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com, and I'm joined once again on this Monday. He's another year older. I'm, of course, talking about Alex Cazorla, who celebrated, I think, birthday number 23, right? Mm-hmm. On Saturday there. So, Alex, happy Monday to you.
Happy Monday. Yeah, I'm a year older. I don't think I'm a year wiser, though, so I'm sorry, Dave. I don't think I've made the cut.
I forgive you. And it only gets worse the older you get. Wait till you start losing your mind on top of it. Let's see here. On this Monday, boy, Alex, the news cycle, as we expected, crawling to a standstill right now. But with that said, the Steelers announced on Monday morning the start of when they expect the start of their 2016 training camp at St. Vincent College in La Trobe. That will take place on July 28th, I believe, which is a Thursday. That will be the reporting day. That will be probably the conditioning test day. And then the first practice that the fans can attend will be on July 29th, which I believe should be a Friday. And then one would think, even though the Steelers have not confirmed this yet, that the following Friday would be the Friday night lights practice at La Trobe Memorial Field. Mm-hmm. And with that, I guess you better start getting the McLumina and oil change, right?
Yeah, it's got an inspection I got to do next month, so fingers crossed on that. But yep, barring any, you know, spontaneous combusting from the McLumina, I will be there for all, what is it going to be, 15 practices.
And what was it last year, 18 that you had?
Or yeah, just because of the Hall of Fame game, since they had to put in a couple extra to compensate for it.
So it'll feel like you're back on a vacation this year.
It's always a vacation. No, man, I love St. Vincent. I mean, it's 51 years that Pittsburgh has been there. I think that alone is incredible. And just the campus is absolutely gorgeous. You have the Arnold Palmer Airport right across. You can see the planes take off and land. Man, I mean, I have not been to many college campuses, but that might be the prettiest one in Pennsylvania.
What do you think, you know, since last year you've obviously been to the Senior Bowl and took in those practices, do you feel that your knowledge of how to watch kind of practices has evolved over the course of the year?
Yeah, I think you learn a little bit more. I think the big thing the Senior Bowl kind of taught me was, you know, focusing in on one area, because with something like the Senior Bowl, you just can't watch everybody. And really, I talked to some friends that had been down there before, and they said, really just watch a position group the whole week, because if you try to bounce around, you know, you're not going to really learn much of everything. I think it's better to learn a lot about one group than to learn just a little about every group. And so that's what I did. I kind of watched the defensive backs. But, I mean, the mindset of Senior Bowl and training camp are different. You know, with training camp, you know who these guys are, everybody, the whole backstory and everything. Of course, we're going to do the play-by-play in the, 11-on-11s and things like that. So, I kind of have the routine a lot down better for training camp than I did the Senior Bowl.
So we'll definitely look forward to that, and we'll be giving people, listeners, once again, the opportunity to help donate to that cause the closer that we get to it. I think we usually like to begin that a month out, and gee, it's hard to we're 2 months away.
Yeah.
Already. So we might have to start firing up the GoFundMe drive that we like to do every year to help support the cause, and put some money in your gas tank, and put some money in the McChicken fund as well too. So let's see here. What else? The Steelers OTA practices, the first of 10 of them, will be getting underway on Tuesday. You know, we're at the mercy of the beat writers reporting what they see and you know, things that kind of stick out to them. So with that, I thought it'd be kind of fun to you and I kind of you know, speculate as to, I wouldn't say really speculate, but kind of look forward to this week at things we kind of hope to learn from this week's practices, which obviously we're not going to be able to learn a lot, but, you know, maybe some players learning up at, lining up in certain mm-hmm. positions. I'll kind of start, you know, I guess Duran Grant would be a great place to start. You know, is he going to start transitioning to safety? Is he still going to be a corner? Is it, you know, what's going to happen with him? So I think that's one of the things that I'm most interested to learn this week. Coming out of the OTA practices.
Let me ask you, do you think he's going to be a corner or safety? My guess is corner, but what do you think?
You know, I keep going back and forth on this. There's no reason to think that he won't be a corner outside of you would have thought Mike Tomlin and Keith Butler and them would have done a better job of kind of shooting that stuff down during the offseason. Now, obviously, here's the thing on top of that. They've drafted Sean Davis since all that took place.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's obvious that if Grant is moved, you know, starting to work at safety, it's not with the idea of him really ever becoming a starter.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's more about, you know, this offseason he just gets kind of cross-trained to play both positions. But, I mean, he was drafted. He played at Ohio State all 4 years as a corner. You know, and really only play one defensive snap last mm-hmm. year at corner. There's really no reason to think that he won't start things off this year at corner, but we'll see.
Right, yeah, I think corner too, just because, you know, the Steelers only drafted one corner. Basically, you know, in terms of a depth chart offsets, you know, one of the corners that was lost, you know, you lose Antoine Blake, you lose Brandon Boykin. You know, if Grant moves to safety, you really only have four corners now. Who's going to be your fifth guy? You know, is it going to be a Donald Washington or one of these future contracts? I just don't think they made a, you know, clear enough effort to add corners that would tell me that Grant does not have a path to, you know, play time this year or in you know, 2017. So my guess is that he stays at corner. If you can get a guy to stay at a position and learn that position, that's the ideal thing. You really only move these guys if you have to.
And one would think he doesn't even know the cornerback position.
Right, he's still learning, yeah. And so to disrupt that, you know, and to move him somewhere else, he's got to start all over at safety. It's just, again, unless you have to because the player just isn't going to be able to succeed or your depth chart is so in a horrible spot where you have to make a move, I think it's better to keep a guy where they're at.
When you look back at that pick now and everything that's happened since, do you wish they would have went with another direction?
No, but I don't really think about those things a ton. I know it's easy to probably say, well, this guy's become a stud in the NFL, some guy that was around Grant's, you know, selection. But, you know, we'll see what Grant can do. I don't want to sit here and say that it was a bad pick because we don't know much. I don't know much about Duran Grant. He's one of the players on the roster I know very, very little about just because he hasn't gotten an opportunity to play.
And also when you're talking about, look, I mean, you hope to hit on, obviously, on probably three of your first four draft picks, you know, first picks in the first four rounds, I should say, assuming you had one per round. You obviously want to hit on at least three of those four. And I say hit in the fact that, you know, not expecting these guys to become studs, all of them. Obviously, you hope your first-round guy does. Mm-hmm. But the rest of the guys, I consider it a win if a guy sticks on your roster all 4 years of his rookie contract and maybe, you know, is more than just a special teams guy, albeit, it, you know, there's nothing wrong with a guy being a special teams stud, you know, drafted in, say, within those first four rounds there. The thing is, you know, you look back at a guy like Shamarco Thomas, he has, you know, he's had his moments on special teams, but he's also had some other, you know, head-scratching moments on special teams and obviously never became the safety that they thought he would become. So, you know, if a guy like Duran Grant can, and he hasn't, you know, let's face it, he's already been waived once and mm-hmm. signed back. If a guy like him can kind of stick the remainder of his contract and become kind of a depth special teams guy, then you have to be happy with the pick, right?
Overall, yeah, for fourth-rounder standards, I think the assessment of a second-round versus a fourth-round, you know, what they become is pretty different. But, yeah, I mean, just looking at it for this year, you know, Dave, they're going to need a lot of special teams help. They lost a lot of guys that played, you know, significant snaps on special teams. You know, Antoine Blake, Brandon Boykin, Will Johnson, Sean Spence, Terrence Garvin. That is a lot of bodies. If Ross Ventrone does not make this roster, there's another guy. I know they've added some, of course. You know, you add Travis Feeney, you draft him. You know, you sign Steven Johnson in free agency, who's going to probably take on that, you know, Spence Garvin role, where I think Johnson could give you something on defense, which Garvin couldn't. But I think Johnson will be a really good special teamer and better like Garvin, because Spence, so that was just an average kind of guy all around. But again, the point is that you need guys to step up on that special teams unit, because the thing we can't forget and we have to appreciate is how good this coverage unit was last year. It was fantastic all season long, Dave. And injuries hit them hard at the end of the season. There were so many guys getting shuffled around, playing in spots they hadn't played before. Ross Cochran was on special teams covering kicks, and he hadn't done that all season long. And this unit generally did not miss a beat. And where it got him into trouble was in that Denver game, that first punt return by Jordan Norwood for that big, whatever it was, 30-some, you know, yard return. And it was the loss of Roosevelt Nix, because you had Matt Spaeth out there running down punts, and that should never, ever happen again.
Is it going to be an either-or with Shamarco and Ross Ventrone?
You know, no. I mean, I haven't gone through the whole list. And I think we had this discussion the other day, didn't we? 6-4 corner safety, or 5-5. Didn't we have that discussion?
Yeah. But, I mean, when you think, you know, Sean Davis, obviously, Mike Mitchell, Robert Golden, your last two guys right now, talking about Shamarco and Ross Ventrone, neither really give you anything in the way of a safety.
Right.
I guess Shamarco would be a better, you know, a guy you could shove in there, more of a in the box type guy.
Yeah, I think Shark will make it. Ventrone's, I mean, he's been cut and signed so many times. I mean, the team's numb to it. They can just do it because they've done it so many times before. There's not even a discussion about it. He's like your fifth. I think Matthew just written the article. He's like your just always 54th man. Even if he's not on your roster because you cut him, he's always right there, and you know he's going to come back.
But he sure is fun to watch on special teams when he's healthy. You know, if not for that hamstring injury last year. I mean, he's likely on the roster all year.
Exactly, yeah. He's like an alley cat. He just comes around sometimes when you need him, then he's gone for a couple weeks. And you, oh, yeah, there's the alley cat. It's alley cat Ventrone. Got the mane of it, too.
And obviously, too, you know, it'll be interesting going back to Duran Grant. If he is kind of cross, you know, get some work at safety this year, well, then that kind of gives you kind of a flex kind of position as well, too. Maybe you save a roster spot along the line.
I don't know
if
they'll do that. I mean, Tron Davis can already do that. So maybe it's good to have those multiple guys, but they do already have someone that has that background more than Sean Davis.
Sure. Another thing looking forward to OTAs, I guess, would be a guy like B.J. Finney, right? And is Chris Hubbard more of a tackle, or is he a guard, or is he, you know, the jack of – is he the poor man's version of Kelvin Beachum at this point?
Yeah.
And, you know, where does a guy like B.J. Finney factor into the rotation on this offensive line? And is there a chance that a guy like B.J. Finney could cost a guy like Cody Wallace a roster spot this year?
I suppose that isn't impossible to your last question about Wallace, but I think Wallace has been such a trusted and known commodity, who's a tough guy, physical kind of a tone setter, that I think it can be really, really tough to bump him off the roster for a guy that's never played before. I really don't think we're going to learn a ton about that battle, and there is a battle there absolutely between Hubbard and Finney, but we're not going to learn probably a lot about that at OTAs, because they're probably going to open up the second-team offensive line with Hubbard at left guard and Finney at right guard, or flip him, so you're not going to really see a pecking order, so to speak, there. You know, to your question about, you know, what do they view Hubbard as, is scary and as concerned as I am about him playing tackle, obviously he's done it. He became the tackle last year, the backup after Beachum went down, and you know, Stingley didn't get a hat last year. I don't know if I'd call him the poor. I mean, yeah, I get the poor man's Kelvin Beachum, but I call him like a Trey Essex, where he's kind of that, you know, multi-purpose guy he evolves into. But I think that they do view Hubbard as a guy that can give him snaps at all five spots, and that's certainly going to be an advantage.
And what's sad is I think tackle is his best spot.
For Hubbard?
Yeah.
I don't think tackle. I think guard and center, I think the more you keep him on the interior is his best. And that's what he's done the most in the NFL level. But I think they view him as the ability to play all five spots. Now, remember, Finney does have a tackle background a little bit at Kansas State. He saw a little bit of time there. I think it were two games his senior year. We filled in halfway through. I think one was in the bowl game, too. I think it was against UCLA, where he came in and played some right tackle. So he's got a little bit of flexibility, but at the NFL level, Hubbard's done more.
Well, what I'm saying is I'm begrudgingly saying that tackle is his best spot, in my opinion. Now, obviously, you've seen him practice a lot more than I do. I mean, how many snaps does Hubbard have over the course of the last, what is it, three seasons?
Yeah.
You know, 15?
Yeah, I think he had, what, 7 in 2014, and then he had whatever he got in the one game he came in at left tackle last year.
So that's obviously not a lot to draw my conclusion on, but that's how I feel at this point. Now, you go back to his time at UAB. He was a tackle there, an undersized one at that. So, you know, we've seen the preseason snaps at center, yuck. We've seen a lot of preseason snaps at guard, in my opinion, were yuck so far. When you look at the total numbers of the offensive line, while you could carve out spots for both Hubbard and Finney, I don't think it's going to go that way. I think it's going to be an either or, and I find myself rooting for Finney to be the or.
I agree. I like to see Finney make this. And who knows? You know, he got hurt at the end of last year, and you know that kind of derailed him as having a chance to maybe even make this roster. But you know, as much as we've counted out Chris Hubbard the last 2 years, this guy keeps making the roster. So that really tells you there's something they really like about Chris Hubbard. So I'm not going to try to make that mistake again. This team likes Hubbard, and I think he's going to be at least the early on favorite.
And it'll be shocking if the top four tackles now aren't on the 53. I mean, this team's carrying five tackles into the regular season, talking, of course, about Villanueva, talking about Ryan Harris, talking about Marcus Gilbert and Hawkins, the rookie. So we would be surprised if those – and with that said, there's no real hard reason to have a guy position flexible such as a Hubbard. You know, then in my opinion, you're looking for your best interior flip guy.
Yeah, no, I think this line group is really set, Dave. I think the only battle that's even there is just, you know, Hubbard versus Finney. I think everything else is set in stone. Your tackles are set. Most of your interior guys are set. I think it just comes down to Hubbard, Finney. That'll be the only one really to note. And again, I don't think we're going to learn a lot about that here at OTAs.
All right, who else you interested in as far as maybe pecking orders or something goes at OTAs?
The one, and I'm making an assumption here because we haven't really seen it, so I'm assuming that Senquez Golson is going to be in the slot in nickel, but I guess we haven't really seen it yet, so we want to make sure that's the case. So that's my assumption. That would be the most logical, again, seeing what the team has done in the past, trading for Brandon Boykin after Golson went hurt last year to give him depth in the slot. But I do want to make sure that that's the case. So is that that's my expectation. Is that your expectation, Dave?
Yeah, I would think so. But, you go back, and I think the other day I was thumbing around on some YouTube stuff and came around some Golson stuff. And for a guy his size to play like he did on the outside, and his ability to play the run, I think a lot of people forget that this guy wasn't afraid to stick it. You know, I hate to use a proverbial stick his face in the fan, but on the outside, he much better run defender than a guy like Artie Burns, right? And it would be interesting at least to see him get some snaps on the outside during training camp.
Yeah, so it'll just be interesting because, you know, I was reminded of this, and this was a good point that the team really wanted to try to keep Gay in the slot last year because they talked about the phrase was the hub of communication. But again, like I said, I think that Golson's going to be in the slot. You know, they drafted, you know, Golson, then he gets hurt. They trade for Boykin to give that back up to Gates. I think that told you where they wanted Golson to play. I assume that's going to carry over for this year. But who knows? I mean, like you said, Golson played outside at Ole Miss, and maybe they mix some stuff up. So I want to see if he's getting any snaps there, if he's going to be just exclusive to the slot, so really can catch up and hone his craft as quickly as possible in the slot. So the biggest thing I learned about OTAs, the little that we do learn, is just kind of where guys are playing, where they're getting lined up and looks at, and that's something I'm definitely going to try to keep an ear out for.
And we'll obviously overanalyze the useless information that comes out of OTAs, but it's kind of what we do.
Well, I think it helps build a picture of how guys are being used. I think it provides context. So if I'm seeing, you know, if Golson gets snaps outside here and you see him get outside snaps at camp, it kind of helps build that picture a little bit. So, you know, yeah, you want to try to avoid overanalyzing it. But and who knows how much information we get, man. I feel like the Steelers are as tight-lipped as anybody in the league. Like, you see these other, you know, teams out here talking pretty in-depth about, you know, how these guys are doing and where guys are playing. And I think we're going to get crickets out here in Pittsburgh. I feel like we're the kid with the poor, like, asking for porridge, little, like, you know, poor kid in British or something. Like, can I have a spot of porridge or something? I don't know. I'll work on the joke. But we just get no information in Pittsburgh. They're very, very tight-lipped about it.
Well, you know, more so in the regular season. Look, I understand, you know, they can't report certain things unless they ask a player and a player tells them.
I always love that. That makes me laugh. Ramon Foster says that this guy did well today.
Right. Now, or played at certain position, yeah. or something like that. I get that with the media, but I mean OTAs, I mean, If Bert Lawton doesn't have strict rules in place, yeah, as far as that goes, and I don't get the sense that they do. You know, I might reach out to him on Twitter. He's bored, you know, to see if he'll answer that question. What can they and can't they report on during OTAs? That would be interesting. But you know, if they're given free rein to report what they see, then why wouldn't you report what you see? Is it because most people would think that it's irrelevant?
No, I mean, I think that.
Or is it laziness?
No, I don't think it's that. I just think that there's a lot of rule. And again, I don't know the whole spiel. I've never really been behind the scenes like that. But you know, the Steelers are always training camp. They're pretty, you know, well, training camp they're pretty lax. But you know, the Steelers have been close to the vest about the injury report and stuff. And you know, I know at least at training camp, at least they have pretty strict video rules. If you start filming when you're not allowed, their guys running after you, literally flagging you down to make sure you don't take any video that you're not allowed to. You know, they just do individual openly. Once they start doing any sort of teamwork at all, the camera's got to go away. So no, I don't think it's laziness from the reporters. I just think the Steelers are pretty try to play very, very close to the vest about that kind of information.
I wonder if I could get Bert to come on the podcast.
I think he's going to start being a busy man right now. You're going to have a small window in June to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to pick his brain. Like I said, I'll probably reach out to him on Twitter to see what's allowed from the media during the OTA. Now, yeah, like I said, look, it's obvious, you know, formations and personnel groupings maybe as a whole you don't want out there, but you know, so and so seeing first or seeing second string snaps at right outside linebacker to me is not a big deal. Yeah. Let's see who else we got that we're interested to see. Maybe a guy like McCord to mm-hmm. see, you know, how he's being used. Right.
Yeah, him, Medakevich. I assume, again, Medakevich will be inside, but he had told Steelers.com that he wasn't sure where he was playing. He hadn't been told. So just to help kind of confirm some of those things for rookies, you know, if anyone's getting extra work in the return line, they get an idea how that's going to go. I mean, you can assume it'll be, you know, in punt returns, A.B., DeMarcus Ayers, Eli Rogers are kind of the three guys all chomping at the bit. So, yeah, I just try to learn about where guys are going to play. You know, a little bit about are guys flipping? Are they keeping him in one spot? Or is Feeney going to line up? It'll probably be right outside linebacker. But are they flipping? Are they staying in one spot? You know, those kind of things you're always interested in, just to help build up some framework of kind of what to expect and what to look for in training camp.
I had finally gotten a chance to go back and watch a large selection of tape on undrafted free agent wide receiver Kanan Severin out of Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what I thought I was going to find when I went into it, but I ended up definitely coming away wondering why this kid went undrafted. And, of course, the more research you go back and do on this, you can kind of put the pieces together. For starters, he didn't. He was unable to work out at his pro day because of a hamstring injury. I think because of him not being a combine invite, that certainly hurt him.
Mm-hmm.
Second, when you go back and you look at the amount of plays that he played last year, and I have not found a reason why this was. Maybe you have some insight into this. He only played 54% of Virginia's offensive snaps last season. Now, you can look at that two ways. For a guy that only played 54% of the snaps last year, he still managed to catch 54 total passes. And, oh, yeah, he caught 67.5% of all passes thrown his direction. Now, obviously, when you look at him on tape, being a 6'2 guy like he is, he's not fleet of foot. Mm-hmm. But with that said, he's definitely faster on tape than a guy like Justin Brown was, Steelers, 6th-round draft pick a couple years ago. There's more to work with there. 8 touchdowns last season, which I have I've compiled all of those up in a video on SteelersDepot.com. And also, the thing, too, when you go back and you look at the college career of Sammy Coates, all the most of his touchdowns seem to be explosive play variety. In fact, most of his damn catches during his final season at Auburn seem to be explosive play variety. And when you go back and you dig into what Severin did last year at Virginia, 13 of his 54 total receptions last season were explosive plays, meaning 20 yards or more. And I found that appealing. He is a bit of a body catcher. That sticks out on tape. Clunky. While he probably comes out of, now correct me if I'm wrong, if you feel I'm wrong, while he probably comes out of Virginia with a little better route tree than a guy like Sammy Coates did, he's a lot, to me, he's not as fluid. He's a little clunky, as far as that goes. But the fact remains, people say, well, he doesn't separate. He separated enough for 8 touchdowns and all these explosive plays. And, I still think it's far-fetched to think that he can make the roster, make the 53-man roster. But I think there's something to work with there as a possible practice squad guy. And he could really help us cause, I think, if he shows anything in special teams.
Yeah, it's just going to be tough to try to get that path, because I think they want that fifth receiver to be a guy that can give you, something in the return game. I think that's obviously the intent of DeMarcus Ayers. You're going to have Eli Rogers with that skill set as well. And even if both those guys falter and they want to get just another receiver who just produces as a receiver, you have Shaq and Phillips, who's got a year under his belt, the whole year on the practice squad last year. He's going to have, a good leg up coming into this thing. But, the thing about receiver in the draft, it's a saturated position. Sometimes guys are looking for specific types, the way the Steelers did with DeMarcus Ayers. Let's get a return guy background. Some guys want someone that could play in the slot, so they want a different profile. There was a lot of talent at receiver, as there is every year, of guys that go undrafted. Kyaris Garrett from Tulsa, who had great numbers, great workout times, and he goes undrafted, and that was a real big shock to himself, and I think most people that follow the draft. So, receivers are an easy position to fall out. But I think, Severin will have a great chance to make the practice squad, especially if, again, Ayers and Rogers totally flop and Phillips makes the roster, then you have a great chance for Severin to do that. It'll be very interesting.
The other thing that stuck out, 2.5 yards after the catch for Severin. So, that's – in other words, he caught it and was tackled. when you look at a guy like Ayers who can end up going as late as he did despite catching, 90-something balls last year, I guess it's not overly shocking that Severin went undrafted. But when you consider the full package of the 6'2 size and what does he go 205 something pounds, something like that, I thought he's decent as a blocker, and not only he did line up all over the place from what I saw on tape. Now, Grant, I'm not trying to paint this guy as going to be the camp phenom, going to make the 53, but I think you could do worse, I guess, what I'm saying, for an undrafted wide receiver. And boy, they should have some good competition for a fifth and final spot.
Yeah, receiver is deep as always. Rogers and Phillips and Ayers, and you even have Isaac Blakeney, who's a big guy that's a track background, so he's kind of an interesting story. Let me ask you this, Dave, since you've looked at more of the undrafted guys, is Severin your favorite UDFA the Steelers brought in?
Yeah, because I'm excited to see what McCord can do, mm-hmm. and where he lines up and all. But I think those two would probably be right there that I'm most intrigued about. Okay.
Yeah, I like that. I think I mentioned him last time at the very end of the podcast, that Gorgio Newberry, the defensive end from Florida State. He's a pretty underdeveloped pass rusher. I don't think he's ever going to give you a ton from there, but I think he's got a great motor. He's got a nice, you know, burst off the ball, and he's a pretty, you know, heady guy. So I think he's going to be a guy that's going to be tough to cut because he's just going to work hard and fly around and make plays.
I guess the thing with him, and because of the move and everything, I just haven't had a lot of chance to go look at Newberry. But I mean, we're talking prototypical size, right? Mm-hmm. With him, do you know what his time measurables were right off the top?
I don't remember for sure. I think he ran four in the high fours, 4.9 or something in his 40, and I think his, you know, verticals and things were all, you know, respectable, not crazy good, but definitely respectable. I'll pull it up now.
Let's see, 6 foot 5.5, 285 pounds. You would think that John Mitchell would want to put a couple of ribeyes on him if that's where he's still tilting the scales at. 4.89 40-yard dash, it looks like, at his pro day after running a 4.94, I think, at the combine. 20 and 21 reps on the bench, vertical 30 to 30.5. That's consistent. Broad jump, 9'6" versus 9'2". Better 20-yard shuttle at his pro day than at the combine, and respectable three-cone drill. Mm-hmm. So
he'd actually played a tight end in 2013. I think he was used as a backup tight end. So, you know, he's got a little bit of that athletic background. He's not the fastest, you know, straight line, you know, speed, of course, but he's got a nice burst off the football. So I think he's an interesting guy.
Is he a run after the football?
Yeah, that's
what
actually my favorite traits about him. And I bet you any kind of money, that's what got him a roster spot here in Pittsburgh. He's got a fantastic motor. This guy runs hard. Doesn't matter if the game's over, if they're winning, losing, first play of the game, last play of the game. My favorite things about him was just the size, the strength, the motor, and he gets his hands up again. He batted down 6 passes last year. That was second on Florida State. Jalen Ramsey, for comparison, had 10. You know, Newberry had 6 in a rotational spot, so that's pretty crazy.
Do we know how many sacks did Newberry have? Do you have
it wasn't much. His production wasn't great. I think it was 2 sacks maybe last year. Yeah, he was a one-year starter, basically, and again, he was even rotated last year, so, you know, the production wasn't great. The Steelers, though, and I guess this is kind of intuitive because if you take guys from big colleges, they're undrafted free agents, but the Steelers have a history of taking, like, you know, really great high school prospects that didn't really work out and taking them as UDFAs. That Newberry's in that role. You know, Jay Rome, who they have as a UDFA from Georgia, was in that role, one of the best tight ends to come out of high school during his class. Didn't really work out. Cameron Clear was in that same role last year. Mike Thornton was in that role. So the Steelers really love those, you know, the Southern high school kind of guys that never really panned out.
Let's see here, with Newberry, 43% of the snaps last year at Florida State. 2 sacks, 20 tackles, 11 pressures, 7 hurries, 4 knockdowns, 10 run disruptions. That's not bad for 43% of the snaps. Only had a half a stuff, though. Missed 1 tackle. Let's see, what else can I find here on him? 164 of his 390-something snaps that he played came on third down. Let's see what else he had. I think that's the big thing. He did have played 154 special team snaps. Evidently.
The thing I like about him, he played all over that front, too. I mean, because, you know, they would run their 4-3 in base. They would go with the 30 front and sub-baggage football. This guy's played end. He's played tackle. He's played over the nose in their 30 front. I mean, this guy's done it all. So I think that's attractive to kind of help accelerate his process.
Speaking of defensive ends in the upcoming OTA camp, you would think a guy like LT Walton, you would really hope he sticks out this next week.
Yeah,
right?
You hope you just see some progression. Any second year guy, you know, you want to see them quickly kind of catch your eye and take that next step. So you want to see that from Walton, Dupree, Jesse James, you know, the whole class. But it'll be interesting. You know, I want to see if if we can get an idea of who's kind of the first, you know, defensive end up, if we can kind of get an idea. And I'm sure second team's going to have a pairing, you know, probably Matthews and Walton. But one, I want to make sure that Ricardo Matthews is playing the five, just to kind of help confirm that, because, you know, we're not positive on that. And then see who's playing opposite of him. You assume it's LT Walton.
I guess something else we can look forward to is with Daniel McCullers.
Mm-hmm.
Does he get any work as a five? And, you know, when they break out the nickel, you know, is he included in the early versions of that? Because there's no guy I want to be more wrong about right now than Daniel McCullers. And he's really going to have to take a step forward this year, especially
right. Right. I expect him to, you know, at least for OTAs, be the starting nose tackle, you know, veteran guy. You're not going to give Hargrave, you know, anointed as such right away. You got to earn it the way any rookie does. I don't think you're going to see McCullers really involved in the five. Maybe a little bit in nickel just because they like to rotate guys and give those guys that experience just in case it ever happens on game day, knowing that McCullers will likely have a game day hat, regardless if he's the starting nose tackle or not, just that, you know, you need that depth. But I don't think he's going to play there much in the regular season because, I mean, you have Hargrave, you have Ricardo Matthews. Those guys are infinitely better in terms of pass rushers than McCullers.
All right. I think was it this morning or was it yesterday? On Sunday, you had a post-draft Steelers free agency wish list. I think one of those guys – no, let's see – no, I thought maybe you had the kid from San Diego on there who signed with the Saints this morning, but he wasn't on there. But why don't you talk a little bit about your wish list for the rest of the offseason?
Yeah, and just to be clear, you know, I'm not really super attached to any of these guys. I just wanted to throw some names out. You know, Steelers signed David Johnson, so it's kind of serves as a reminder that the free agency signings aren't over yet. So I just threw out some names on there. There's not any big, you know, crazy great names out there. But maybe you could add a receiver, get a veteran guy, kind of the back end of that pool, that Jared Tutu kid that was at San Diego, Philadelphia last year. He's played a ton of special teams, a little bit of work on offense. Because, again, if the Steelers want to keep their fifth receiver, you're assuming somebody that's going to give you a good amount of special teams value, whether that's returning, recovering kicks, or something along that line. Of course, you know, DHB can cover kicks as well, but, you know, did that fifth guy that can give you something, you know, other than just waiting for a spot for someone to go down. So I thought him, you know, he was interesting. I think they could really add an offensive guard. I think it was one position that they legitimately could add is somewhere on that interior offensive line because they only have 14 linemen right now. So, and the Steelers like to kind of roll in the training camp with 15, you know, three teams of five. And if you kind of lay out the projected kind of, you know, three groups right now, you're kind of missing a guard. So I thought Sean Hickey, who was, I think an undrafted kid last year, the Steelers had some interest in, could make sense. Maybe they go a little bit bigger name, that Amini Saltulu kid who was with Carolina. He's coming off a torn ACL, but he's getting healthier now. The Steelers had brought him in for a pre-draft visit in 2012, so I thought, you know, maybe just there's a connection there. And I wouldn't mind a veteran safety either, just because as I wrote about, I think last week it was, Dave, that, you know, the youth in the secondary is a little troubling. There's really not a lot of guys that have experience playing there. So I kind of threw out a couple names, Craig Dahl, who has a lot of special teams value as well. And then James, I can never pronounce his last name, but that, Ahedebo, I think.
I think you got it on
your
first time.
Yeah, how about that? And, you know, the Steelers are familiar with him as well, though, because he played in Baltimore. I think last year he got benched. It was a bad year last year in Detroit. But the previous 2 years, he had seven total interceptions. One of those years came in Baltimore. He picked off three. So, you know, Pittsburgh has some familiarity with him as well.
Going back, trying to jog my memory about Amini Sitatalu, he was nasty. Mm-hmm. Nasty in college, right? At where was it?
Midwestern State. Yep, little small school kid. Yeah, and you got to get noticed. You got to do something really special to get noticed out of a small school like that. And he got drafted, what, third, fourth round? He was drafted pretty high.
I think second, if memory serves me.
Right.
And the thing with him, let me see.
I think you are right about the second round.
Quick.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Second round out of Midwestern State. The thing is, too, that didn't he play a lot of tackle there?
Oh, I don't remember. I just know he played guard at the NFL level.
But I thought, man, this guy, and of course there wasn't a lot of tape on him coming out of Midwestern State, but I remember thinking to myself, man, what a nasty disposition. You hate to throw the comparisons to Kimo Atu, because I think a little bit different, you know, not as much bubble butt there. But definitely the nastiness there. So, you know, we talked a lot early in this podcast about how, you know, right now, really, the only offensive line battle spot would probably be Athene versus Hubbard. I'm with you. I wouldn't mind to see another young body.
And again, just
in
from
there.
A number standpoint, you know, they only have 14 after releasing Mike Adams, and they want to go with 15. So I really expect them to bring in somebody at some point.
And it's going to be like a merry-go-round with the roster from here on out. I mean, the 90 that are on here right now, there's going to be. You want to venture a guess of before the first actual cut down date, you know, from 90 to what is it, 75, takes place? How many more different players will be on this 90-man roster? At least
10.
Is 20? Would you go as high as 20?
I mean, there's 20. There's a lot of injuries, and you're making me nervous already here in May tape. But, I don't know, at least 10 or so, because guys get hurt. You know, guys get cut once you go through preseason games and injuries. And, you know, you got somebody that's got a bruised, you know, whatever, for a couple of days. You need to bring somebody in to kind of fill out the roster. So, yeah you're going to see, by the cut down to 75, yeah, you're going to see 10, 15 guys come through here.
That'll be interesting. Try to remind me to go back from May 23rd until the first cutdown of how many actual, you know, waving injured, you know, how many new bodies are put onto the.
And that's the best
roster.
Time of year when there's. Remember David Nelson last year just coming in? He practices 20 minutes. He gets hurt in one on ones, and that's his Pittsburgh Steeler career. 20 minutes.
And needless to say that any free agents, if they should sign any from this point forward, are going to be all minimum salary deals on top of it as well. All right, anything else we kind of looking forward? Boy, the Tuesday can't get here soon enough.
Amen to that. Yeah, and hoping to get some decent information out. Yeah, because starting to run out of once we start those rankings, you know, that we like to do. That tells you it's kind of the dead part of the year.
Yeah, and I guess NFL Network is tonight. Tonight, will they resume that? What night is that on now? The top, top 100 players or 216?
I'm not sure if it's tonight or tomorrow. Or today, it's usually the Dancing with the Stars night. But I think AB will be on there, but he won't be obviously in the running anymore.
Yeah, I doubt I'll be watching that.
Thank goodness.
All right, folks, you can follow me on Twitter at Cedars Depot. You can follow my co-host David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow Alex Kozora on Twitter at Alex_Kozora. You can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate to the cause, like so many others have in the past, you can. And in fact, now that I have a few minutes, it's a perfect time to go over some recent donators. Ovidi Pelotti. Sorry, I butchered your name. Ovide. How would you pronounce that?
I'm going to stop after. I got a couple things pronounced right. I'm going to quit while I'm ahead on this podcast.
Kyle Kitzmiller, Junior Anderson, Andrew Newman, William Miller, William Millar, Pierre Miller, Jonas. I don't have my glasses on either. Bazario, Tom Rarick, Michael Haynes, Raymond T. Evanhoff. Let's see, Steve Olmsted, Christopher Sabona, all these people have donated since the 1st of May, and we certainly do appreciate it as well, too. Make sure we give those people some shout-outs. For the rest of you, you can find the donate button in the navigational bar up top of Steeders Depot. For others who may have had problems with the sites, with some redirects, whether it be from mobile or from the desktop version, I have done my best on Sunday. I spent the day trying to go through that. I think I may have found a culprit of some pop-up spam there. As always, feel free to reach out to me at theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you see any of that stuff pop up on your machine or on your phone, because I can't fix anything that I don't know about. So with that, we'll see if David Todd might be back with me on Friday. If not, Alex Kozora will be. And as always, thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.